Hello and welcome to episode one of the Sunday Plodcast. So this is a running podcast dedicated to getting you through your Sunday plod. Whether you're listening pre, during or post your run doesn't really matter though. We just wanted to provide you with an insight into the lives of some top runners and coaches, along with some discussions on current trends within the sport of athletics. So I'm Ollie Lum. I'm a student at Cardiff Met University and I'm currently doing a PhD in sports coaching.
Hello guys, I'm Matt Seddon. I'm the co-host of the Sunday Plodcast. You may know my slower brother, Zach Seddon. Me and Ollie went to uni together. We're both Cardiff Met alumni. And look, anyone who knows us knows we're huge fans of athletics, track and field, distance running especially. That's what we're going to be talking about mainly on the podcast. We just want to talk about elites, coaches, you know, grassroots. We're going to cover pretty much everything. Hoping to get a podcast out every Sunday for you guys, once a week, just covering all topics, running basically.
So in this first episode, we spoke to Josh Griffiths, who's one of our old friends from university. He's a 2:13 marathoner. He's run for Wales and Great Britain at Commonwealth Games and World Championships.
We speak to Josh about, you know, largely about uni, about coming to uni is almost like an ordinary runner, you know, just someone who liked the sport. He was good, but made huge improvements uni and sort of post uni especially. We talk about him coaching himself. Literally, this guy is just completely sole coach. Doesn't take, doesn't even really have an advisor in any sense. And then obviously we talk about shoes. We talk about COVID. We talk about training. You know, he gives us a little insight into like a week's training, the good stuff. He actually gives us a little breakdown of split sessions. Not just these grey area athletes, you know, they sometimes don't really want to talk about specific sessions. But yeah, it gives us a great insight into what it is, you know, to be, you know, this guy is an elite marathon runner in the UK and at this current time as well. An outside shot at Tokyo 2021 as well. Enjoy.
Hi Josh, how's it going, mate? Good to see you.
Hi Ollie. How's it going? All right.
Yeah. Not too bad. You're our first guest on this podcast, so it should be a privilege for you, mate.
It's an honour.
Yeah. How are the legs feeling? All good? Training all right?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks. Back from an easy run this morning, so yeah.
How far did you go?
Only 5. I'll do a workout later. Yes.
Decent. Matt, you all good?
All good, boys. All good. Good to see Jay Griff. I haven't seen him in a while, mate. He's looking well, though.
Yeah, Matt, how's it going? Cheers, mate, you too.
Bad, brother. Not bad. Yeah.
Okay, let's get straight in then. How was London, mate?
Yeah, it was good. It was an interesting experience this year, obviously. Probably watching on TV, but very different to normal. But, you know, I think coming away just grateful they had a chance to race because a lot of people didn't, obviously.
Yeah, so just for the listeners who might not know, you were around 2:13:11, I think, and you were third Brit. How did that feel?
Yeah, like going into the race, I was hoping to run maybe a little bit quicker, but conditions on the day weren't great. It was a bit rainy, a little bit windy, just not ideal if you're trying to run the fastest time possible. So, yeah, coming away, I think the time was pretty good given the conditions, and yeah, to come third Brit was a nice bonus as well.
Yeah, you mentioned the weather, and I think a lot of people would have seen that watching on telly. How much difference do you think it made having kind of no crowd on top of that weather?
Yeah, so I'll start with the weather. Like, if you're trying to run a marathon, you obviously want it dry because if it's raining and your clothes get wet, you get a little bit heavier. So, you know, it just slows you down a little bit. But over 26 miles, you know, that little bit adds up. So. And then, yeah, same with the wind. It wasn't too bad, but, you know, when you're doing 20 laps of the park in the middle, when you're getting tired towards the end, a little bit of wind can actually drop you a few seconds every single lap. So, yeah, it wasn't ideal, but given how it was, I'm happy with the time I ran. And then, yeah, it was a massive shame to have no crowds because London normally is so good. You see the fans on the course cheering the fast runners, the slow runners, everyone's just brilliant. But yeah, this year was certainly different, you know. But no, I thought London Marathon did a great job of putting the race on, and yeah, really grateful I had the chance to be in it.
Yeah, definitely. I think with that race, how was it going in? Because you obviously had that bubble with the rest of the elite runners. And that must have been quite a different experience, particularly to your first marathon.
Yeah, it was very different. Like, so before this one, we had to have a COVID test 5 days before arriving at the bubble. As soon as that came back negative, then you kind of had green light, you could go in. So we got to London on Friday morning. As soon as I arrived, had another COVID test. Then that was negative as well. And then at all times within this bubble, you have to wear these little bump monitors on your chest, and it monitored whether you came within 2 meters of anybody else. And if they did, then they'd flash red. So, you know, they were trying everything they could to keep people socially distant and things like that. And yeah, you know, everybody within the bubble had to have all these COVID tests and these bump things as well. So I think once you were there, you were confident that, you know, they did everything they could to keep the event safe. And yeah, it was a really good experience. You know, you had all the top athletes in the marathon world. So yeah, it was a cool race to be in.
Mate, that's crazy tech. So it would just vibrate when you're coming near someone.
Yeah. Like,
no. Wow. Mate, how did you cope with that? Was it not just like a little bit lonely, almost like a little bit boring in a way?
It wasn't too bad. So you'd have like a cafeteria, if you imagine it, but instead of sitting next to each other, they'd be like two seats empty or something. But
yeah,
you'd be queuing for food and you'd have all these flashing red things because so people are hungry. But yeah, I know. It's weird.
Wait, do you want to just say like how that differs from your first marathon? So obviously your first marathon, you're in with a mass start and then
You know, 3 years on your elite. Yeah, so my first marathon was in 2017. That was London as well, but that was one I just did. It was my first one, so it was no elite field or anything. I went up with my parents a couple of days before, staying in hotels, sharing with my brother. You know, tube to the start and all that. And then queuing up with people with an ironing board on their back, dressed as Buzz Lightyear, waiting to run the race. And yeah, it was very different, but. Yeah, no, it's kind of cool to experience both because I guess not many people do. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's mad really that you go from that to then you're probably eating in a cafeteria with Kipchoge and Bekele this year. And I think that takes on quite nicely because I just want to go rewind a bit and talk about how you actually got into running and progressed from being, I guess, a school runner to a university runner to a very good club runner now running like internationally. So do you remember what your PBs were actually before university?
Yeah, so I think going into university, I'd just about broken 9 minutes for 3,000 on the track. My 1,500 was never very good. It was about 4:16. My 5K, I think, was outside 15 minutes and probably 32 minutes for 10K. I'd never run a half before university, but... Yeah, I'd always run, like, I enjoyed running through school and stuff, but I was never very good. I kind of progressed a lot when I went to university. That was the first time I had a big group to train with and kind of got a bit more competitive. And then I learned a lot of stuff from my first coach in university, which was James Thee. Like, it was a big step up from where I was running in school. And it kind of exposed me to people who had competed at a much higher level than I had, which was a great environment to be in at the time. And yeah, I did learn a lot from that experience and I'm grateful for the chance I had in that group because it progressed me a lot. But then towards the end of my university years, I was kind of progressing towards the marathon and that group was a bit more focused on speed. So I decided to go on my own and coach myself because I like reading about the sport and watching stuff and listening to other people. So I thought, you know, I'll give it a crack on my own. I was still meeting up for runs with, you know, YouTube boys and a lot of other people in Cardiff as well. But yeah, I really enjoyed taking on training for myself. I was kind of felt responsible for what I was doing. And if I was going to run well, it would be because of me. So, and if I didn't run well, it was also my fault and nobody else's. So yeah, that kind of progressed me into London, as we just talked about. And then, yeah, I've kind of progressed on from there again, I guess.
Yeah. So just a bit of context for the listeners. So the three of us actually kind of went to university together, trained together a bit, and then I think myself and Matt were actually living with you when you did that first London Marathon. I don't know about you, Matt, but I thought it was so interesting just to see Josh's kind of progression that year. And it was crazy.
Yeah, especially in a balaclava when we were living there. Like, I was just going to ask Jay Griff, like, how did you trust you were moving in the right direction? Like, I know you do like good runs and that, but when you're coaching yourself, you're not like, I may be wrong, but you weren't really getting any opinions from like anyone else at all.
Yeah, no.
I would say you didn't even have an advisor either, did you?
No, it was just me.
Yeah,
at the time I was studying my master's degree, so kind of, you know, training on my own schedule kind of fitted nice. I didn't have to make a 6 o'clock session if I was busy that evening, or, you know, so it was nice to kind of train on my own times and stuff. But yeah, it definitely wasn't easy, and it took a lot of, probably say, guesswork now looking back. But yeah, you know, it was nice to be able to live with you boys, because you're runners and you know the drill, so I could kind of bounce ideas off you too as well. But yeah, it definitely wasn't easy, but I don't regret it at all.
No, I think there must have been, like you say, a real big like inner self-belief though, because most runners, they need, well, especially like myself, like probably a load of other people as well, you need confidence from someone else. Like, you need someone else there saying, oh yeah, you're doing sick, mate, or you know, you're doing well, or like in a session, if you're like, you know, ahead of someone, you know, you're fit. But you were just solo, even to the point, like, you weren't even, you know, there wasn't even like an advisor just overlooking it saying, yeah, that's a good session. You know what I mean? It was just crazy.
Yeah. I, you know, sometimes before that I'd have a bad race and I'd think why, and I'd think about the training I'd done. I thought maybe it wasn't good enough, but I wasn't setting that training either. I kind of just wanted to take responsibility for myself for what I was doing. And I knew then if I failed, that it was my fault and nobody else's. So, yeah, it was nice to kind of go all in on my own and kind of bet on yourself. But yeah, looking back, it definitely wasn't easy. And even though I was training on my own and stuff, it was nice to live with other runners just to talk about other things. And I could chat to you boys about a session I did. What do you think? And if I'm really tired, I'm sure you boys would have told me, you know, have a rest or something like that.
Yeah, I remember a few walks to the shops with dragging your feet after a big long run.
Yeah,
I think one thing I noticed was just the actual increase in your easy runs that year. I seem to recall, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I feel like I remember you saying that was made quite a big difference to you.
Yeah, so just a lot more easy miles and not being so obsessed about pushing the pace either, you know, just relaxing on an easy run, where an easy run actually feels easy. You know, finishing tired. So yeah, you know, and that was kind of a nice social side of it as well. When you're training on your own, if you just link in with someone for an easy run, it was nice. So it wasn't like all on my own kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. 100%,
mate, what's different now then? Are you just the same Jay Griff, just setting everything yourself? You know, not many like external people helping you out. Is it pretty much the same?
Yeah, so my program is completely set by myself, still just me. I'm still improving, I think, so I haven't looked to change too much. If I wasn't running as fast or if I was struggling, maybe I'd look to change them. But yeah, it would be nice to run with a few other people, but where I live, you know, there's not that many people, and definitely not that many people can run fast enough. So yeah, you know, but I like it, kind of got used to it, running on your own. You just kind of switch off when you go out there, and it's nice to have just some peace and quiet sometimes. So but yeah, you know, over the summer I trained with a few boys in Font-Rameau, and it was really nice to be in that group environment. Even if you're doing the runs on your own, you kind of just chill out with you know, with some of the boys afterwards.
Yeah, definitely. I think that marathon in 2017, the 2:14 you ran?
Yeah.
That kind of changed, I guess, massively how, and like led you to the path you're on now, where you kind of get to go to Font-Rameau and places like that. And I guess, how did that change your career almost, because you mentioned you're finishing off your master's when you ran that. So I guess the plan was looking for a job and things like that. So how did that change what you were going to do?
Yeah, well, at the time of the marathon, I'd submitted all my dissertation and everything like that. So I was pretty much just waiting to graduate in June or July. And then, yeah, I was very much looking to head into the world of work. Definitely didn't think I would be, you know, where I am now at the before that race. But so, yeah, you know, that race kind of came at the perfect time, and I ran a time, changed the path I was on 100%, because after that I automatically qualified for the World Champs and Commonwealth Games, which I never thought I would run that. And it's opened doors for me to run in other major marathons around the world as well, which, yeah, it's been an amazing experience. It's not easy running all those miles, but it's 100% worth it when you get to travel and race and train with some of the people you do. So, yeah, the race came at the perfect time for me, and it was a big step up, but one I thought that my training indicated I could do as well.
Yeah, I remember just I think it was the Lad Bible article that put club runner comes first Brit at the London Marathon. And I remember reading it thinking, do they realise this guy's, he's run for Wales already, he's been to kind of like world mountain running champs and things like that. And it's quite interesting how the public, I guess, view that mass start.
Yeah, like I don't think I was quite as bad as a lot of people made out I was before, but yeah.
Yeah, they said, oh yeah, he's used the your local park run to tune up for this.
Oh, mate, so what you've improved about 2 minutes, just under 2 minutes, pretty much, right? I was just gonna say, like, how hard is it to obviously to put into context for people, you know, a minute over a marathon, even 2 minutes at your level, what would it change? How hard is it to get that minute, 2 minutes improvement, you know?
Yeah, you know, if you're a four hour runner trying to get to 3:58, you don't have to change too much. You just, you know, run a little bit more, maybe that experience, and you can knock off 15 minutes. Knock off 15 minutes, I've broken 2 hours. So, you know, the faster you go, the jumps are much, much smaller. As you know, from your boys racing as well, if you're a 1500 meter runner, taking 1 second off or 2 seconds off, it's huge. So, yeah, it's definitely not easy. So, you know, I would say the consistent years of training would be one thing. I've obviously learned things from races I've done in the past as well, what moves to go with, what moves not to go with. Yeah, you know, just a lot of experience and opportunities as well, which, you know, you've just got to take and back yourself as well. So, yeah, but it's not just the marathon. You know, my 10K since then, I think, has come down by over a minute, and half marathon 2 minutes as well. So I think improving at the shorter distances has also helped me go faster over the longer distance too.
Yeah, I would probably say that. Watching you race, mate, you are a very disciplined racer. You know, quote me if I'm wrong, but you haven't really had like a bad marathon, have you? Or even,
yeah,
really.
And the city marathons I've done, which have had pacemakers and stuff like that, I've done 5, and I've run 2:13, 2:14, 2:14, 2:15, 2:16. So pretty consistent. The championship marathons are different and in very different conditions. I haven't done so well in those, but, you know, I still feel like I can improve there. But yeah, in terms of like paced races where you're aiming for a specific time, the marathons have been pretty good so far.
I think that was it when you won the mass race that time as well. Like, you know, even in London, just gone, like, you weren't going with people who were going too quick. Guys were going through in like 65, 64. You know your limits well.
Yeah, so in London just now, there was a pace group set at the Olympic qualifying time. So they were aiming to go through in 65:30, which I was hoping to do as well before the race. But on race day, you know, it was rain, it was windy. You would have needed to be in like 2:10 shape to run 2:11:30, I think. I wasn't. So I knew that. So I thought my best chance of finishing high up here is to back off a little bit, run my own race, and then try and come through in the second half. Right. So it wasn't easy leaving them go. But, you know, it worked in the end, because I think in the last 10K, I made up 3 or 4 positions. So,
wow.
Yeah. it worked in the end, but it's a kind of a bold call at the time to not go with them.
I think it's being that smart to know exactly what shape you're in, not just, you know, runners, we're so like, you know, we're so confident that we can like do X amount. We're like, oh yeah, 210, sweet. Oh, I can do that. But yeah, that's a smart move, man.
Yeah. I think I was just going to say.
I guess.
Sorry, do you want to go, Josh?
Oh, I was just going to say, that's probably just the experience I've had from those other races as well. Just, you know, this was my 7th marathon now. Had that been my first one, maybe I'd have made a mistake. Mm. We kind of have to learn things along the way as well.
But that, I think, really takes a lot of courage. I think coaching yourself, because a lot of people could be told by their coach maybe on race day, and maybe people listening have experience of this, where their coach is like, on a race day, okay, because conditions are like this, you need to try this and go with these people. But to have to make that call on your own, how did you find that? Do you think that's better for you personally?
I think training on my own kind of gives me an advantage in some ways. You know, I don't have the group or anything like that to push me when I'm not feeling great or something like that, but I'm also in a position where I'm always running on my own. So if I just see one guy there, you know, I don't think, oh my God, where's the group? There's only one guy. I think, great, there's a guy there. Yeah. So, you know, being on my own is not a position that I haven't been in before. I always train on my own. So I don't mind running my own race kind of thing. And if there's a group there, brilliant, that's a boost.
Yeah,
that's such a good point, man. Yeah,
awesome. And like you've taken that self-coaching into your own coaching now, haven't you?
Yeah, so, you know, I'm not a sponsored athlete or anything like that. You have to try and get by as well. So, yeah, I thought, what can I do that, you know, allows me to train whenever I want, and possibly not even just in this country? So, yeah, I started my own coaching business. You know, I can do it from anywhere in the world as long as it's got an internet connection. So, yeah, and I really enjoy it. You know, it's a job, but at the same time, you feel like you're helping people too. It's really nice to see someone go from like a 3:10 marathon to a 2:55, you know. For some people, breaking 3 or breaking 5 or whatever, everyone's got their own goals. And if you can help in some way, you know, it's a nice feeling afterwards too.
100%, mate. Give it a shout out. Where can we get coached by Jay Griff?
Yeah, just hit me up. I got a website, www.joshgriffrun.com, and you can find all the details on there.
Perfect, mate.
Awesome. Do you think you take some of like the same principles of your own training into the athletes you coach, or is it quite different to the individual?
So every plan is different because every person I coach is different. Mm-hmm. You could have two people aiming for very similar times, but their lives are completely different. One has kids and a busy job, and the other one can train when they want. So their schedules aren't going to look the same. So, you know, I think coaching myself, you kind of learn, you know, if I was being coached by someone and having it all fed to me, I don't think I would be as good as I think I possibly am at coaching other people, because you kind of learn things along the way about yourself and how other people might do things as well. So I think, you know, the beliefs I have coaching myself are the same as what I imply to these people as well that I coach. But, you know, you also have to take into account that I'm training for a, you know, 2:12, 2:11 marathon, and they're not. So mileage and intensity and things like that vary. You know, you have to plan all these recovery things and also realize that running isn't the only thing in their life. You know, it's just part of it. You know, they have a job, they have kids, they like to do things as well. So it's just about finding a good balance between training enough so that they can improve, but that it doesn't take over their life as well, you know. Mm.
Yeah, that's interesting.
That's a key one.
Yeah, I think particularly important this year with COVID as well. How is that coaching remotely? Because I think a lot of things are going online now, like schools going online, universities going online. So how is that process of coaching over the phone, over email? I'm not sure what you actually do with yours, but how do you find that?
Yeah, so to be honest, I was perfectly set up for all this because all my coaching is done remotely anyway. Mm-hmm. I have a few local people that I coach, but a vast majority are based, you know, England, North Wales, Scotland. I've even had some people in Mexico and Singapore. So, you know, a lot of it's done online anyway. I'm always available over WhatsApp or email, which, you know, is easy for everyone to get in touch. So, yeah, you know, I might look to start some one-to-one in the future, but right now I like having the flexibility of being able to train in places like France or Spain or go to race here on the weekend without thinking I have to be here every week or, you know. So coaching is good to give you that flexibility. But it's definitely been tough with COVID because with no races, you could argue you might not need a coach. So, you know.
Yeah.
It's not been easy, but I know it's not been easy for anyone this year. So, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, just as we're kind of approaching the end of part one then, what do you think's next for you with your running and maybe your coaching as well?
Well, with the running side of things, it's kind of difficult to predict, as everybody knows. Like, there's not many races on right now. So, in the short term, I think I'm likely to run the Olympic marathon trial next year.
Mm-hmm. Any news on that?
Nothing that I can say just yet. Something should be out soon. But then long term, I guess I'd like to race, you know, maybe tick off a few of the marathon majors. I definitely like to get under 63 for a half, you know, just run another couple of quick 10Ks as well and then push towards, you know, 211, 210 for the marathon if I can too.
What about the coaching? Anything on the horizon or?
Coaching, yeah, I'm just loving it at the moment. It fits in perfectly with, you know, the life I live. And, you know, maybe as I get older, I would look to expand things and start more one-to-one and try and grow the business like that as well. But yeah, you know, right now it's going pretty well and yeah, I'm really enjoying it.
Okay, sweet. We'll see you in part two then.
Mate, well, I'll start where we left off, mate. So I know you can't say much about it, but if there is an Olympic trials, obviously, how does that differ for one, mate? Because obviously, it's going to be head-to-head, not sort of like you're not going out there for a PB, which I think is old school racing. I think that's good. Like we saw the American Olympic trials, it was quite exciting. On top of that, that will probably, if you people who do go to Olympics, it's going to be three marathons in a year, which is obviously quite a busy year for a marathon guy, plus a few halves in there to tune up. Like, yeah, how'd you prep for that, Jacob?
Yeah, well, I believe the policy as it sits right now states that you still need to have the qualifying time. So at the moment, there's only three guys with the qualifying time, Callum Hawkins, Johnny Mellor, Ben Connor. Yeah. Callum Hawkins has been pre-selected, so has no reason to run the trial, really. So then, as it stands, Ben Connor and Johnny Mellor would have to run. They don't need to run the time there, but anybody else wanting to gain selection would still need the time. That's my understanding as I sit here now. Things could obviously change. I don't know. But yeah, you know, I'm just going to prepare for another race. I don't think it would be slow anyway because there's still people who need the time and people who would think that their best tactic would be to make it hard. So yeah, you know, just got to prepare for whatever comes and race under whatever conditions we have to race.
Defo, man, defo. I mean, on that, you're probably in quite a good position given what you said about training on your own. Like, you can work hard and graft, you know, going into that.
Yeah, you know, I think it would be a fair guess to say that the field's going to be small and that, you know, it's going to be in a venue maybe not quite as well equipped as we saw London a few weeks ago. So, yeah, you know, I think if you're in a position where you train on your own and maybe, you know, can get used to these weird little loops that people make up, you know, you can be in a good position for sure. You know, you're not going to have the same size field as London, especially with the quality of runners you had in London as well. You know, 2:13 put me in 18th place in London. You know, in the trials, if there's not any foreign athletes, that's going to put you top three, top four. Yeah. So it's going to be a different type of race for sure. And it'll, you know, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. It's not fully confirmed yet, but yeah, we'll see.
No, I think if it is,
In future, I would really like to see a trial like the Americans do, where you know, you don't have to get the time, you just race. Yeah. Yeah. And then first three across the line, because I think that could really help build the profile of the sport as well, like who's going to get the spots. But yeah, you know, that's for the future. I don't think that's going to happen next year.
Yeah, I agree with that, man. I just think also it's a publicity for people who aren't involved in elite sport. They get to see the elites. Like, I think, I know America's bigger and it's high profile over there, but the amount of people who turned out, I think, I would love to see just old-fashioned racing in this country as well. Like, you know, just fighting for spots, no time, you know, I think that would be class.
Well, there was the World Championship Marathon in 2017 in London. You know, there was only three Brits.
Yeah.
And, you know, two of us were pretty unknown. It was only Callum, really. And there's no way all those fans came for Callum. People are genuinely interested in running in this country. It just doesn't get marketed very well for whatever reason. But I think, the support would be there if the, you know, we were able to build up the interest like you do in some other sports.
Yeah, 100%. We need to connect the, you know, think about all thousands of people who park runs. Like, but they have literally, if you ask a park runner, they have no clue, like, how quick elites run, who are the elites, you know what I mean? They don't know. We need to do more as a sport connecting that.
Yeah, I think that's the same with
100%, well. You know.
Like, I think the track championships, I think, like, that first three across the line could work so well like it does in the US. I think the fact that on BBC or whoever it is, when they're doing the broadcast, they have to explain, okay, so it's the top two and then it's with the time or without a time and this person's got the time, this person hasn't got the time. I think it just makes it so much more of a spectacle if you are literally just seeing people literally racing for their spots on teams.
Yeah, and I think you also need to make it simple for the people watching as well. You have to remember that not everyone watching likes athletics. They don't know what the qualifying times are, and they definitely don't know who's got it. So if the person watching the TV who normally watches football just tunes into athletics and he sees, right, the first three across the line, they get to go, it's exciting. But if the person who wins ends up not being able to go, but the person in sixth does because they had a good race at the start of the season, it's a bit weird, you know.
Yeah, there's too much dispute over who's the best in athletics because people start going times, then they start going, you know, winning races. There's too much dispute. People need black and white, boom, this guy's the best on this day, you know, this year. Like,
yeah, 100%.
That's the problem. Yeah.
And, you know, you can even start getting betting involved as well, you know. People bet on horses and virtual horses. Like, why can't people bet on running? You know, if it's the first three across the line and you have odds for everyone and you see their times this season, and you know, what's the difference between that and horse racing or something like that?
I would love to see more. I mean, it's easy to say, but I would love to see more head-to-head clashes in running because I think that would boost the elite's profile. It would boost the, like, someone like yourself's profile or, you know, track runner's profile as an individual, but it might actually get a following. You get like a win record. Like, if you've got win stats, like, you know, like America Sports, NFL, boom, they have a win-loss stat. You know what I mean? Like, you have stuff like that. You wouldn't necessarily have to be quick, but even like, you think sometimes BMCs, they turn out like sometimes their A race at like a Grand Prix is stacked, you know? And that gets exciting. But, you know, if we had win-loss stats and, like you said, betting, man, like, we got to start bringing in other sources of income in athletics. Football is a huge on bet. Like, I know, obviously, you know, betting, like, you know, sometimes isn't good, but, mate, it just brings in a huge revenue. And, mate, let's be honest, an interest. Like, people don't have an interest in virtual horses, but they are because they're putting a belt. Like, yeah,
I know.
You know,
like, I know some people who would probably bet on a virtual horse race. You know, these aren't even real horses. They're made up. But they would never bet on running because they'd be like, why would I do that?
Literally.
You know, I think if it was marketed a bit better, then like you say, not only would more people be interested, but yeah, the profile of the sport would build, and more sponsors would be attracted, more people could get paid, and it would end up to more people running faster. Yeah.
Sources of income. I mean, look, mate, how, you know, moving on a little bit, how's it been? Because I think another problem with Athleta Flakes is how hard it is to actually like train in a sense. And this has probably been highlighted because of COVID even more. But, you know, even someone like myself, it's been, if you're a track runner, it's been near enough impossible to get on a track. Come on, let's be real, this is an outdoor space. And I just feel like in Athleta Flakes, you know, tracks, they do all they can to almost discourage people in a sense. Yeah. They charge extortionate prices to go run around the track. They limit it to, you know, certain times of the day that people can go around there. Now, this is why it's so distanced, because people can't go. They can't go to a track and do whatever, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, to a close to it is probably the most stupid thing I've ever heard. It's an outdoor space. Yeah. Like, since July, I've done one session on a track, which is not ideal when you're preparing for London. And that one session I did on the track, there was nobody else there. Yeah. So all the other times the tracks have been closed, I've been going on a cycle path, which is full of people. Yeah. Like, you know, you can't tell me it's safer to go on there than it is on a track. But
yeah,
it's just crazy. And, you know, kids not allowed on football pitches because the gates are closed. It's just ridiculous. Like, if you're outdoors, people need to exercise, not just for their, you know, physical fitness, but for their mental health as well. It's crazy. Like,
well, this is,
you're solving, this is it. I'm trying to solve one problem, but you're causing 20 others. Yeah.
I feel like if more public ran on tracks, they would actually be able to determine how quick. Like, for example, you know, your marathon pace is what, like 70, 75s or whatever, or like Kipchoge, for example, runs 70s for a marathon. If people could go to a track and do a 400 meters and actually see how quick that is, they'd be like, Jesus, these guys are insane. I don't think they get enough credit for how good they are runners. And because people are so far distant from the sport. As in football, people know how good Ronaldo is because everyone's tried to kick a ball before. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, 100%. You know, you watch Formula One, you don't really get a grasp for how quick they're going on the TV. But when you see it pop up as they're doing 200 miles an hour, you know, you realise, Jesus, that's fast. Yeah, I can
relate.
Yeah, so, you know, it. Back to my coach, and you know, some of the people I've coached, they've done a few track sessions, and say they've done 10 400s and they've done them in 80 seconds, and then they might ask, what pace do you race at or something, and you'll say, and then you'll say, well, Kipchoge does and stuff like that, and it's like, whoa, I had no idea.
Yeah,
but it's because, like you say, you can't relate. It's it's difficult.
It's hard to have an interest in something.
Yeah, you know, I think it would, yeah, it would definitely help educate a lot of people, which half the time is what you need to get them interested. Because if you don't understand something, you're not going to be that interested.
I think that's where 5Ks could get marketed so much more as well. Because like you said, man, there's so many park runners. But the interest in 5K on the track is very limited. Because even if people do watch athletics, they're watching the 100 metres. They might watch an 800 or a 1500. But to get someone to sit down and watch 5K on the track who's not in the running world, it seems quite far away. But then if you market it in the way that these guys are running a park run, essentially round a track, and then people can really compare their own, whether they've run a 20 minute, 25 minute, 30 minute park run, they can compare these guys running 12 minutes. I think there's really something to be said there.
Definitely.
Yeah. Definitely. I actually think, I mean, it's a little bit controversial, but there's not that many people who absolutely love every single event in athletics. I would like to see it broken up a little bit. You can, you know, athletics still needs to remain as a whole, but instead of an athletics night having 100 meters, 800 pole vault, and a 10K, you have an endurance night, which has 1500, 5K, and 10K. You have a field event night, which has pole vault, shot put, javelin, and then you have a sprints night, which has 100, 200 hurdles, whatever. So the, you know, most of the sprinters love watching all the sprints events, but they get bored watching a 10K.
It's
the same. Like, I think if you look at event groups, if you grouped them into like nights, you know, you're an endurance night, like Highgate, look at that. There's amazing fans.
Yeah.
But if you were to put a pole vault on in the middle of it, I bet a lot of them would leave, you know.
100%.
And the same as if you had a night full of javelin throws with amazing javelin throwers. If you put a 5K on in the middle, it would lose interest. So, yeah.
I totally agree with that. I mean, it's been done. Like, you know, they put on like a pole vault in like Zurich.
Train stuff,
they get mad fans. Like,
yeah, great fans
to do that. Just especially like even Diamond League and stuff. Split it up, man. Because even me, I get 7 to 9 right watching the Diamond League. I bored out my brains. All I'm doing is waiting for the endurance event. You know what I mean? You know, I'm watching the shop and stuff. People, you can't expect everyone to like everything. They're not gonna.
No,
you know what I mean. The shop put is so different to a distance guy.
It's also difficult for me to get interested in even an event I don't normally watch when it's broken up between loads of other things as well. If I was
going to try
and get interested in the shot put, I would want to watch the shot put as a whole, not like a throw every 5 minutes.
There's that as well. That's a great point, man. So we've been a little bit off topic, but I was just going to say, come on, let's talk about the Negri. Let's talk about the shoes. What do we think? How much do we think they're worth? And what do we think, obviously, you know, the future is going to be like with the shoes and stuff? Do you think athletics is fair game right now, basically?
Well, I'll start with, do they help? Yes, they do.
Yeah. I'm glad you...
But I think that's fair because where we stand right now, it's like, there's a lot of brands which are doing them and it's quite easy to get a pair if you want a pair. So, you know, at the start of 2019, it was only Nike doing this and they were only available to Nike athletes. And at that point, I would have said, it's not really fair because you're standing on the start line and that guy's got a shoe which is a lot faster than yours. And no matter what, you can't get that shoe. Mm. Whereas now that we're not there, everyone can wear the same shoe. So I don't have a problem with it.
What do you think? Go on then.
Yeah, just sponsored athletes who might think they're at a disadvantage wearing one brand over another. Because I know some people take their fines. They wear shoes from a different brand and they take the fine. What do you think about that, really?
Yeah, you know, it's really difficult because to be sponsored in athletics is so hard. I mean, you know, if you get offered a contract, you take it pretty much. It's not like there's loads being offered around unless you're, you know, a really, really big name running really fast. So it's a really difficult position to be in, which has only really, you know, been a thing in the last 18 months. But, you know, last year was tough. You had the Nike shoe, which was a lot better than anything else out there. And if you look at podiums or top tens from any road race in the world, it was all Nike. Yeah. And that was not great. But then if you look at this year, things are definitely heading in the right direction. If you look at World Half, for example, the podium of the men and women, you had 3 Nike shoes, 3 Adidas, you know. Mm-hmm. And Adidas shoe was on the podium in London. There are more brands which are getting into the fast shoes now as well. And yeah, you know, you've got New Balance making really good shoes. Saucony, Asics have got one. Hoka have got one. So, yeah, you know, there's a lot of brands trying to catch up. It's just they're probably 12 months, 6 months behind. That's all.
Maybe, yeah. I think long term, it may have done some good because it's going to just encourage shoe sponsors and shoe brands to just keep up in their game and not sleeping. I think for almost a while, shoes were almost just kind of like flatlining, weren't they? There was no, like, innovation. Yeah. Basically the same, any brand had the same sort of shoe. But now I think it's going to be a real, almost like a race every year to bring out a new shoe.
Yeah, and that in turn will drum up a little bit of interest as well. I guess people talking, I mean.
Yeah, it's true.
Sometimes I wish they weren't talking so much about shoes, but you know, it's certainly drummed up a little bit of interest. And like you say, it's going to be a bit of a technology race as well, which... Yeah. You know, a lot of people don't like the idea, but you got to get with the times a little bit as well, you know.
You do.
We don't still run on a cinder track. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I guess, and with the technology race, where that brings the money as well. You know, look at F1, like, doing all sorts of their cars all the time, cycling the same. You know, yeah. It brings the sponsors and it brings the money. Like, obviously, Ineos back in that 2-hour project, stuff like that as well.
Yeah, so, and, you know, I think it's also worth saying that, you know, a lot of people will argue that Nike is still winning all these races, but you've got to remember that they have the biggest budget, so they sign the best athletes. You know, you can put a 2:10 marathon runner in the best shoe in the world, he's not going to win London. So, you know, the best athletes still win the best races. They just run a little bit faster.
Sure.
What do you think about some people who are kind of arguing that the record books need to have some asterisks on there, or have separate records? What do we think about that? Because that's a bit of a topic at the moment, and probably over the last year or so.
It's not something that sits very well with me, if I'm honest. I mean, I think, you know, anybody looking at this generation and future generations will acknowledge the fact that, you know, they are running in faster shoes than before. I mean, at the moment, when you get some, you know, 17-year-olds running a 3:59 mile, nobody's suggesting that they're better than Roger Bannister. You know, you've just got to kind of realize what era we're in and just, yeah, make a fair judgment. It's difficult to compare one era to another. You know, an Olympic title is still an Olympic title, whether that was won in 1960 or 2021. You know, so yeah, it's difficult to compare times, and some people won't see national records being broken all the time. But, you know, to say that we're always going to run in this type of shoe, it's not realistic. You know, in 100 years' time, people will look at what we're wearing now and think, God, that was rubbish.
Yeah,
but, you know,
yeah, I guess it's just
the era we're in.
Yeah, you just don't want running to, you know, go too far from, you know, how it is. Just like, one of the attractions is just such a natural sport. It's just, you know what I mean, just man against himself, basically, man against the clock. You don't want it to differ too much.
Yeah.
Like, it'd be too much aid. But like I say, I don't think it will get to that. They're already putting limiters in place anyway, which I think is probably a good thing. So over the next 5 years, I can see them flatten off. Yeah.
Yeah, I think those limits are really important. And to, you know,
yeah,
just have guidelines for everyone to be able to follow in black and white. You know, you don't have one brand like it was last year kind of doing their own thing, and all of a sudden they're minutes ahead of everyone else. But, you know, now I think come 2022, everyone will have a pretty similar shoe, and it'll just be like, wear whatever you want, like it used to be.
Yeah.
It's just some people have had a head start on this little project.
And at the same time, I think everyone's going to have PBs that were set in carbon shoes. So your next PB in carbon shoes is directly comparable again.
Yeah,
like you say, 2 years ago, people were like, oh, he's taking minutes off. But if you're taking minutes off this year, you probably are a few minutes quicker because people were wearing Next Percents or whatever it is 2 years ago. So their PBs are genuine PBs, whether people like it or not.
Yeah, you know, like... It's a bit ridiculous for someone in their 60s to say, oh, you're cheating for wearing those shoes. I mean, get real. What do you expect? Someone trying to win the London Marathon, he wears old school shoes so that he makes someone happy in his lounge. I mean, he needs to be on a level playing field with everyone else.
You've got to, you just got, like you say, when we talk about fairness, you got to just get the shoes, basically, because they do make a difference.
Yeah,
you know, so it's good. All I ask mainly for me is just that people acknowledge, like you even have yourself, you've acknowledged it. You know, some people like to just literally put their improvements down to just getting fitter. And it's like,
I mean, I think you can be fitter and run faster, but there is no way you can say those shoes don't help, because you've just got to look at
everyone
records. You know, it's pretty obvious. I mean,
literally.
But yeah. You know, I think I'm fitter than I was when I ran my previous PBs, but I've also worn the shoes. It's both.
Yeah.
But, you know, to say that they don't help, I would just be lying. Otherwise, I wouldn't be paying £240 for shoes. I'd be paying
£60. Yeah, that's so true. Yeah.
What about the mental aspect of it? Because I think a lot of people thinking going from kind of one brand to another, maybe are thinking when they actually get these carbon shoes from Nike and things like that, that I think a lot of that is a mental game and thinking I have got the best shoes in the market. I've got the best shoes compared to the others I'm racing against, and that's putting me on a level playing field. Do you think that mental aspect makes as much as the carbon plate itself or the Zoom X?
Yeah, I think it's probably a combination of a lot of things. You know, there's definitely a little mental boost you have knowing you're in the best shoe, or, you know, for a driver to know he's in the best car or whatever, you know. I think the shoes definitely give you a little bit extra, you know. They're not going to do anything on their own. You still have to have a good build-up into the race. You have to train well. You know, you have to eat well, sleep well, do all those extra little things. You know, the shoes are just an extra little 1%, just like everything else. But, you know, I think if you have a good day, it can turn a good day into a little bit of a better day.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Mate, let's just, I think it would just be interesting for me. You might not want to share this, Josh, but just interesting for people listening. Give us like an insight into like, say, 3-4 weeks out from London, like you're probably in your best shape, your fittest shape, bro. Just give us a weekly run through. We want to know what you did that week training wise.
So yeah. Going into London this year, my mileage peaked at 130. Wow. One of the runs I did down in Swansea, it was 28 miles, I can't remember, it's something like 550 average, and it that was within like 125 mile week, and it felt easy.
Really? So,
yeah, you know, that was a big confidence boost for me.
That's,
know,
like just what, three? How long was that running? 3 hours?
It's just under 240 something, I think. But I think I ticked through the marathon in like 232 or 3.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, it's obviously a long way off race pace, but within a big week like that, and it feeling so easy, it was good. And then yeah, you know, that's not the end of the block. I'll go again next week. So
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
But yeah, you know, there's a lot of big sessions and different ones that I do. It's hard to pinpoint one workout that, you know, if I do this, whoa, I know I'm in amazing shape. It's more just consistency. You know, it's not 1 week of 130, it's 10 weeks of average and 120. You know, it's just consistency and getting every workout done. They're not all amazing, but they're all done.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And that just reminds me, actually, we actually filmed a workout with Josh, I think a couple of years ago, maybe last year.
Yeah.
So if anyone is interested in that, it's a track workout, Josh. You can find that on the Retreat Harriers YouTube page. So yeah, that might give you a nice insight into one of the workouts. Do you remember what it was, Josh?
I believe it was 2 miles and then some 600s. And then I think I did a mile at the end as well.
Some of that. Awesome. Well, I mean, that's time to wrap it up then, boys. So thank you very much, Josh, for your time. Good to speak to you.
Cheers, Josh, boy.
Thanks for having me, boys.
Yeah, really appreciate it. Cheers.
So, man.